Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Kim.
And I'm Sharon Kim.
And welcome to Research Sense for Korean American Therapy, a podcast that removes barriers and gives you a rundown of the latest Korean American mental health research.
Today's episode is on the mediating role of Korean immigrant mothers' psychological well-being and the associations between social support and authoritarian parenting style. This was written in 2018, and the authors are Yoo Jung-so, Charissa Chia, Sevgi Bayram Ozdemir, Craig Hart, Christy Lung, Shuyan Sun. And I apologize if I mispronounced any of your names. Well, so what is the problem that this article tried to tackle?
Yeah, that title was a mouthful, including the names as well. And again, if any of you are listening, I'm speaking to the authors, please feel free to reach out and tell us how to correctly pronounce your names.
Yes, please.
I think this study is one of those studies, and we're not going to get into those details, but they use some high-level statistical analyses in this, and there's some complex concepts. But when I was reading it, I kind of boiled it down to this idea. A lot of Asian American mothers or Korean American mothers have this reputation of being a tiger mom. Mm. And what do we mean by a tiger mom? Like, what are some of the characteristics you think of when you hear the word tiger mom, Sharon?
You know, like helicopter moms where they're like watching their kids every move and they're disciplining their child everything that they do.
Yeah. And it's very, very strict. And it's like, you got to do this. Oh, I'm so glad my parents don't listen to this podcast. But I just think about my mother telling me I have to practice my piano 30 minutes every single day. And that's not something you can really fake because she can hear the piano from anywhere in the house. But what if that tiger momness was related to the mom's psychological well-being or her distress? Like, what if she's just not doing well psychologically and therefore she's kind of putting on this tiger momness? And moreover, what if that psychological distress or the lack of well-being came from a loss of social supports? Like, what if this mom just did not have a lot of family nearby to depend on, or social group like friends to also depend on? And what if all those things are related? And so this study is sort of trying to explain, where does this tiger momness come from? Now, I will say as a caution before, you know, our listeners get too excited, this is not the causal reason, but we're looking at some very strong contributing factors to what might be part of this tiger momness.
I love how you kind of set the scene there, because when I was reading this too, I was imagining, you know, being a first generation immigrant mother to be myself, I think I was imagining all the social supports that I lost coming here, right? And so I think that's what the authors were interested in finding out, is the challenge of moving and immigrating to the US means, yes, you gain a lot of things, but you also lose a lot of things, such as social ties that you had in Korea. And you're facing a lot of other challenges that you otherwise wouldn't have faced, such as adjustment challenges and acculturation challenges. And so I think that's what they were coming from, where they're trying to see, okay, so how does social support help the mother's well-being? And how does that in turn help the child or the parenting style of the mom?
Yeah, as I was reading through this, I couldn't help but think of my mother. And I just want to be crystal clear to all the listeners, I love my mother. So no matter what I say, I love my mother very dearly, and we have a great relationship. But I remember hearing stories about how she came to the U.S. My father's family actually immigrated over first, and then he went back and met my mother and got married and brought her to the U.S. I just can't imagine how much of a shock it was for her to come to the U.S. because for her and her family, and this is back in the early 80s, I want to say it might have been 1980 itself, there wasn't internet that was available to the public, and traveling between the US and Korea was very expensive. It was expensive just to make a call internationally between the two countries. And so I do remember hearing that my mother's family was very against the marriage, not because they objected to my father, but they thought that her moving to the U.S. was the equivalent of her dying. And they did not want to lose her their daughter.
Oh, wow. So that's like the absolute loss of tie that you, when you move to the U.S., that's how much it meant to them.
Yeah, because they believed, we'll never see you again.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. And you are going to be gone forever. And so that's a lot. And also for my mother to process and thinking about, I may never see my family again, these people I've grown up with and have raised me, and the friends that I have, I may never see them again. And I'm taking this risk of going to a country where they don't speak Korean in those areas. And mind you, they moved to rural Georgia at the time, so there weren't a lot of Asian things for them to engage in out there. And so I just imagine that movement and that loss of social supports that she has to be something that had to affect her psychological well-being. And I won't say anything about her tiger momness, just in case one she listens to this.
So maybe today's article will kind of enlighten us in maybe some, you know, the factors that affected your mother's parenting style. I mean, when I was reading it, I also was like, wait, so this was wrong, you know, not wrong, but like, I think I definitely saw my parents doing that, and my parents were immigrants themselves. And so I definitely saw that. And so I think in many ways, this article gave us a lot to think about.
Yeah, so let's jump into the background a little bit so we understand what it is that they're investigating. So let's kind of talk about the background a little bit more. So Korean immigrants are known to maintain strong kinship networks. So meaning when they come to the U.S. and they immigrate to the U.S., I mean, family is the bond. Like, you need to have a very good relationship with your family. And if there's any issues or problems that come up, you often depend on family to help with that. And they're tends to be a type of distrust of those who are not part of the family. It's like, do they really want to help us, or are they out to get something?
And one thing that the article mentions is that past studies have distinguished two forms of social support that people can receive from their kinship, like we mentioned, or from their social networks. And one, the first type is emotional support. So these are interactions with your friends and family members where there's intimacy, affection, security, and reassurance. The other type of support is more instrumental. So these are tangible assistance, such as help with childcare, lending you money, and then helping you with language translation when you first come, career-related networking, and providing care when you're sick. And so it seems like instrumental support is more acceptable and is widely more accepted from kinship members, right? So it's easier to accept that from your parents or from your grandparents or from your in-laws than from your friends and coworkers. And so I think what the researchers wanted to know was, yes, does social support impact the mother's well-being? But which social support out of those two is more effective or has a greater impact on Korean immigrant mothers?
And this is me kind of going off on my own personal soapbox. So there are, at least to my knowledge, no specific study investigating this. But if I were to make a guess, I would say that there's a greater emphasis on instrumental support, because if they are immigrant families, they're focused on survival. It's like, how do I get to the next day? How do I make sure that there's food on the table? How do I make sure that my child is taken care of? And so there's a lot of instrumental needs for the family. And so they're thinking about, like, how do I get this provided? How do I file my taxes? That's something that still boggles my mind about how my parents filed taxes without the internet back in the day. And less of the emotional support was needed. It's almost like my parents' generation and immigrant families are in this survival mode. It's like, how do I just get through the next thing?
Right. That is a really good point.
So one thing I did like about this paper was that is distinguishing the two types of social supports, because social supports is something that we've talked about considerably on this podcast. And it is a very powerful factor in helping people maintain their psychological well-being. And to kind of categorize in terms of emotional and instrumental. Do not hear this as, oh, I am someone who likes instrumental more than emotional. Like, we all need both.
Yes. Yes.
And it's less of trying to figure out your personality and like the type of support that you want, and more of, are you missing certain kinds of supports? And is this a way to explain why you're experiencing distress in some way?
Mm-hmm. And not just distress, right? But how you're parenting your child. Is it authoritarian in nature? And by authoritarian, the researchers meant, you know, being strict, less affectionate, expecting absolute obedience in their children. That is how I grew up. I was not supposed to question my father on why are we doing this? Nah, questioning meant spanking. So I think absolute obedience, when I was reading that, I was like, oh, they're describing my dad. No. So that was really interesting just to see that. And that, and the researchers kind of go to say that that comes from the traditional Korean value, you know, the family value of interdependence, hierarchical structure, family loyalty that children are supposed to show to their parents. So the higher Korean immigrant moms stick to Korean traditional values, the higher they're more likely to be authoritarian in their parenting styles.
Yeah, that is the hypothesis. And I think we covered this in a previous episode, might have been season one, where we talked about the Confucian values, mm-hmm. and how there are five key relationships, and one of them is parent-child. Mm-hmm. And that relationship is marked by obedience, because mm-hmm. obedience is necessary to learn from your parents. All right, so we have all of these different variables. And once again, the question that they're asking in the study is the authoritarian parenting style, is that explained by the psychological well-being of the parent? And is that explained by the type of social supports or the lack of social supports that they are receiving? And so that's kind of what the study is exploring. So let's take a look at how they collected the data for this.
I was really interested to find out, like, how would you approach that problem? How would you actually study it? And it was interesting because what they did was they did a longitudinal test that goes across three waves. So the waves were 6 months apart. So they assessed the mothers at wave one, and then 6 months later at wave two, and then 6 months later. So wave three was conducted a year later. In the first wave, what they assessed was, are these mothers receiving social support, and what kind of social support? In the second wave, they assessed the mother's psychological being. And then in the third wave, they assessed their parenting style. And then they try to see some sort of link and impact and influence between the three.
I was trying to explain what a longitudinal study was to a friend the other day, and I came up with this analogy. Most studies are cross-sectional, meaning you're trying to find out what a person looks like psychologically. And so you're taking a snapshot, you're taking a picture. And there's only so much you can get from that picture, because you just see what that person looks like at that moment in that environment. Mm-hmm. A longitudinal study is you're taking multiple pictures across time, and it's sort of like you're almost taking a video capture if you have enough pictures of it, because mm-hmm. you're trying to get a more complete picture and understanding of this person across multiple environments across time. And so longitudinal is getting closer to the sort of video camera, although no one uses video cameras anymore, and more of this video kind of look at someone's life, mm-hmm. whereas cross-sectional in most studies are snapshots.
That's a really great way to understand that. That's helping me understand what longitudinal data sets are like.
All right. So what did they measure? So essentially, they had these participants take these surveys three times. And so what surveys did they do? Well, first was demographics, because we need to know some basic information about them. One was about social supports, and it did distinguish between emotional and instrumental social supports. Mm-hmm. Next was the psychological well-being. Examples of questions that they asked from the psychological well-being was, I like most aspects of my personality. I judge myself by what I think is important, not by what others think is important. Next is the authoritarian parenting style, and it cut across different dimensions of the parenting style. And here's some example items that they asked. I guide my child by punishment more than by reason. Mm-hmm. I yell when my child misbehaves. I punish by taking privileges away from my child with little or any explanation. And then lastly is the acculturations, like how well do you speak English? How often do you watch TV in English?
And all of the parents had to be, they were first generation immigrant parents. Their spouses, they were mothers. And so their spouses also had to be ethnically Korean. All the mothers that participated in the study were married, and 74% of them had college degrees, and they were residing in Maryland, US.
So what were the results of this study? Well, there was a lot, but we're going to boil it down to what we think are the highlights of the study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So greater social supports that the family receives was linked with greater psychological well-being for the mom.
And that isn't a surprise to us, right? We would expect that to happen. The more help you receive from family members, you actually feel better. Yeah, and it helps your mental well-being.
And I do want to pause here for a second, because I remember when I was taking psychology courses as an undergraduate student, I forgot if it was a professor or someone else told me this, that psychology is the study of everything your grandmother told you about life.
Wow.
And so, yes, you as a listener are probably thinking, well, yeah, if they have more social supports, then they're going to be better off, right? And though that sounds like an obvious finding, it's important to say that, yes, you can relate with it. You've seen it in your own experiences, but this is a place where we have systematically collected data. So this is something that we know is a trend across most people, that if they receive social supports, that they do have better psychological well-being. So even though it's a no duh, we are sure it's a no duh.
This is why, you know, if you try to explain this, when I try to explain some of the findings with my mother-in-law, she's like, yeah, I knew that already. And I'm like, oh, man.
Indeed.
And the other result that they found was that the higher the mother's psychological well-being it is, the less they are engaging in authoritarian parenting styles, such as using punitive tactics or physical coercion, verbal hostility with their children.
And I just want to say verbal hostility is not necessarily verbal abuse. It's just, you know, raising your voice when your child misbehaves or something is part of that verbal hostility. So we now have this connection that this authoritarian parenting style is linked with the well-being of the parent and is linked with the presence or lack of these social supports. There is one more little nuanced finding in the study that I think is worth pointing out. And it's, they looked at, remember the two types of social supports, there's emotional and there's instrumental. And an easy way to think about that, emotional is someone that you can go to help you feel better about what's going on in your life. Whereas instrumental is, how can I help you? Is there something I can give you and do for you? Well, when they looked at those social supports separately, they found that the instrumental, you know, doing something for someone else or asking for a specific kind of help, the instrumental social support, so asking someone for a specific kind of help or providing something very specifically, that had a greater effect on the mother's psychological well-being and the authoritarian parenting style than the emotional.
I must say, I was surprised by that. I thought both were very important for a mother's psychological well-being. But we are talking about first-generation immigrant Korean mothers. So one explanation that the researchers put out there is that maybe for first-generation Korean mothers, what they really need right now is tangible assistance. They need somebody to translate for them. They need some help with money. They need childcare assistance. And so those tangible supports, instrumental supports, in other words, is going to be more helpful for them and the mother's well-being.
Yeah. And so that goes back to this idea of immigrant families being in the survival mode. It's they're struggling to figure out, you know, how the systems works, what sort of supports are available for them to tap into in the area. Because yet, let's say for a lot of these immigrant families that come to the US, money is an issue. And for a mother to consider getting another job so that there are two incomes coming into the family, that mother often has to think about, well, who's going to take care of the child, this young child that's at home that needs to be taken care of? Many lean towards grandparents if they're around to kind of help out with that. But other times it's a dilemma. How do I determine what I do? Do I go get a job? But then what do I do about my child at home? And so instrumental supports is a critical part of the well-being of this mother because of the things that the mother is worrying about and the family is concerned about.
And to add to the dilemma of the mom that you just mentioned, if they're not working and the dad is the only one working, then they might feel like because they're not making an income contribution, they might feel restricted in how they use their money. And so financial contribution or tangible financial support from their family members is going to help a lot in them feeling a little bit less, you know, less anxious, a little bit more relieved about their situation.
All right. Lots of stuff we've talked about. What does this mean for the everyday Asian American or Korean American, or what does this mean for therapy in particular? I think one of the most important takeaway messages from the study is that the well-being of the parent is important. And I will even go so far as to say critical to the well-being of the child. So it's not just, oh, I'm going to invest everything to make sure that my child is doing well and that they're succeeding and all. Part of that well-being and how they are parented is linked with how well the parents are. And so I would say that it's a reminder to think about the parents. It's like, you have to think about how well you are and what you need for your own well-being.
Can I just say that that's such a huge mindset shift for Korean parents, because Korean parents are all about their children. They come to sacrifice to give a better life for their children. But in that process, they lose themselves. They lose, you know, the focus on themselves. But here we are trying to remind you, parents, that you want your child to be happy and emotionally healthy. You want to invest in yourself as well.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as cooking food, because you can't talk about Korean culture without food. So if you're going to go out and make this delicious jjigae of some sort, and let's say that's the child, you need to make sure you have good, healthy ingredients. Because if the ingredients that you have, let's say, you know, the tubu is a little bit old and the broth is, you know, made with things that are kind of expired, or you're not quite sure where some of the ingredients came from, that jjigae is not going to turn out well. And we often talk about, it's like, well, maybe it's the techniques, maybe it's the way how I cook it comes, like, and part of that's important. But if the ingredients are not good, meaning if the parents are not doing well, you're not going to have the best jjigae ever, or the best jjigae you could possibly have.
So don't worry about being selfish or feeling guilty about spending time and money and resources on yourself, because that in turn is going to impact your child's well-being.
Another reminder that I think is important, based on the impact of instrumental social supports, I would say that for a lot of groups, such as Korean churches out there or nonprofit organizations, such as Mustard Seed Generation, that these organizations and these Korean organizations throughout the country need to be thinking about how can we better provide instrumental supports for the families out there, because that is something that they're looking for. And so I think that's an important part of the conversation based on what data has been collected across all of these different families. That said, I also want to say we shouldn't minimize the benefit of emotional support either. The demographic of Korean Americans is changing over time. It's not just these first generation immigrant families moving to the US from Korea. We are now having second generation, third generation, even fourth generation Korean Americans who are trying to figure out how to not just survive in this country, but they're also thinking about how to thrive. And once you start making that shift and seeing this new demographic growing, we are going to likely see a need for more greater emotional support as well.
And I also wanted to say, you know, for parents out there who are thinking, what if I don't have family members close by near helping out and giving tangible support or emotional support? Try to open yourself to maybe you know, creating more family-like ties with your friends, with your church group members. Korean ethnic church groups usually play that role, and it's found to play that role and be very common among Koreans. And so that's where sometimes you can find maybe family-like ties where you can receive those tangible supports.
Maybe MSG should have like a workshop on how to make friends as a first generation immigrant.
Where to find friends. Yeah.
Where and how to make friends.
Yeah.
That would be a fun little workshop to do. Well, I hope all of you have enjoyed our episode today and moreover, our second season. This is the last episode of our season and we are going to take a break. And this break might be a little bit longer than our last one. It seems that a lot of us have things going on in our lives, right, Sharon?
Yes. So I am going to be on a maternity leave. Yay for my first child who's been listening to all our podcasts, all our practices, because she's going to hold me accountable. I know it. So I am going to be a tiger mom, but I'm going to tell her it's because I don't have social support. No. And she's going to tell me, you have plenty of social support, mom. You better be a better mom. No. So I think we'll have lots to discuss about after the birth of this baby. And so we are really excited. We will be coming back and we'll be excited to come back with more and really good research to share with you all.
So if you have not subscribed to our podcast, either on Apple or Spotify, please subscribe so that you'll get notification of when we're back with our next episode for season 3. And even though we are taking a break, don't worry, we're not just sitting around. We will be looking for and keeping our eyes open for the latest research that's coming in regarding Korean Americans and Asian Americans and mental health. So until we see y'all again, take care.
See you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our episode, please subscribe to our podcast and check out more at mustardseedgeneration.org
and samuelykim.com. To keep these episodes coming, rate and share on wherever you listen to this podcast.